You are now connected to the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Taking on 2,000 years of indoctrination, 2 hours at a time.
Sink or swim, deep end information.
Asking questions no one else will.
Parabiblical research, spiritual technology, personal empowerment.
Be your own guru.
Master your own ascension.
Guide your own spirit.
And now, showing you how, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Dardy.
Well, hello and welcome to all Facebook friends, personal stalkers, and spies, all lovers, haters, people of all persuasions. You are welcome to the Christian Whistleblower Show. I'm Jeffrey Dardy, and this is where 2 hours a week we shine light into the dark corners of orthodoxy, and we do it with a smile on our faces. We take it very, very seriously, but we also do what we have to do, and we do it without apology. And we're here tonight to talk again about the Christian Whistleblower Show. We're here tonight to give you 2 hours of broadcast excellence, holding nothing back, wall to wall and treetop tall, coming to you direct from Central Florida. We appreciate everybody tuning in, and we're glad you're here. I don't know how many of you were able to listen to my appearance on Coast to Coast on Sunday. It was 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. on the East Coast, and it got better as you went towards the left. But still, you know, Coast to Coast, it's a nighttime show, one of the top 10 radio shows in the country. I was very, very happy to be on the show. Absolutely fantastic interview. I can't think of anything that I would have changed. It was just fantastic. If you go to my website, on the front page, down a little bit on the right-hand side, you'll see a radio player, and you can listen to both hours of my appearance on the Coast to Coast show, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And we were talking about alien agenda in the New Testament. We're going to talk about that again tonight. We're going to kind of break things down a little bit more, go into a little bit more detail. Because the one thing about Coast to Coast, it's, you know, you don't get to go into a lot of detail because you don't have a lot of time. Even in 2 hours, it went very, very quickly. So we want to give you the depth. We want to give you the possibility to ask your questions. And we want to let everybody know everything that we can about what is no doubt a momentous subject. I've had over 19,800 and some visits to my website from the Coast to Coast AM website. And we've had thousands of requests for the free ebook. So if you're one of those that has requested, please be patient. And if you hadn't requested yet, sorry, that ship has sailed. We just can't do any more. It's going to take me till next year to get out all of the free ebooks. Now, I don't know if it'll take that long, but it's going to take a while. That's for sure, because we don't exactly have Hillary Clinton-sized staffing at the Christian Whistleblower or JeffreyDardy.com. So that is the way it is. We're going to do our best to get those to you, and we do appreciate you listening. Let's look at Unindoctrinate Daily. Of course, on the website, it's Unindoctrinate Daily. And it's a daily collection of news items from around the net. We do encourage you to contact us. Use the Contact Us button to submit items. And we certainly will credit you when you submit them. And when we talk about it here on the weekly show, of course, we call it Unindoctrinate Weekly. So here we go. There's in the 2030s, we are told from the Huffington Post that nanobots in our brains will make us godlike. Certainly an interesting concept. I don't know about you, but I will not be the first one in line to have nanobots put into my body. In fact, I'll probably be the last one in line. I'd rather not be godlike. I'd rather be deadlike, I think, than to have nanites on Star Trek, but nanobots put into our brains. And, you know, of course, you think about it. If they put some nanites, into your brain, you know, they'll make you godlike, but you definitely will be the kind of god that they want you to be. And they being, of course, the programmers and the people that put the things into your brains. And so when we think about it, eternal life, what a great thing. Well, really? What kind of life is it? And what are they wanting you to do? What are they wanting you to be? And the real problem comes because we get lost in this idea that this life that we're living in right now in these physical shells is the most important thing that we are and the most important thing that we're going to do. When it's really just a phase, it's just part of a growth process. And to sell yourself short, or to sell your soul, so to speak, or to get nanites put into you so you can prolong this lifespan is monumentally stupid. It just really is. Live your life, live it to the best of your ability. Don't do anything to shorten it intentionally, but don't go for these things that are trying to prolong this physical existence. This life is not you. This body is not you. You are a spirit that happens to be driving a body at this time. And remember, way back a few weeks ago, we talked about it, and you can find it on the archives. These bodies were really mud bodies created by the Lord, who lured us into them and limited us as spiritual beings. So these bodies are actually the outward embodiment of a scam that we've fallen for. So don't get your nanobots, your nanites, whatever. Live your life, do your best, and be ready to move on to the next portion of your consciousness and the next stage of your growth. And here's one that, man, I love my Catholic friends, but come on, man. Holy smoke, the headline says, priest captures image of the Virgin Mary and a forest fire raging through Colombia. Now, here's a forest fire that is, and I don't mean to laugh, but it's a forest fire that's killing people, is ravaging country, it's consuming people's homes and houses, it's running rampant. It is a rampaging wildfire. And this priest sees the Virgin Mary in the flames, and they all want to stop and worship her. Now, I'm not a Catholic. I've never been a Catholic. But what is the Virgin Mary doing in the flames of a fire that's killing people and destroying homes? And if the Virgin Mary's in the flames, tell her to start stomping, throwing some dirt, start putting the thing out. It reminds me of the old story of the little kid who gets his wagon stuck in the mud, and he uses a profanity, uses God's name in vain, and lady walks by and says, "Oh, little Bobby, don't say that. God is everywhere." And Bobby's like, "Oh, really? Is God in the tree?" "Oh, yes, God is in the tree." "Is God in the mud?" "Oh, yes, God is in the mud." "Is God in my wagon?" "Oh, yes, God is in my wagon." Well, then tell him to get out and push. If the Virgin Mary is in the forest fire, tell her to get out and push. Tell her to help put the thing out. And of course, it's just an example of the lengths that we go to when we allow ourselves to buy into the ludicrosity of the superstitions of religions. And just because it's an official, bona fide, very popular Christian quote unquote religion, man, the Virgin Mary in a forest fire, I mean, I can understand her in a piece of toast. I can understand her on the side of a building. I can understand her in the clouds. I mean, she's not doing anything wrong. But what's she doing in the fire? And why doesn't she start putting it out if she's in it? Just something to think about. And I don't know what you're doing, but it's 8:10 p.m. on the East Coast, and a Christian group has predicted the end of the world would be today. So you have about 3.5 hours to take care of your business and get ready for the end of the world again. So here we are again, Christian groups saying this is the end of the world. I thought the end of the world was last week or the week or two ago with the blood moons. I thought it was before that with the other harvest moons. I thought it was before that, you know, with the 2012. I thought it was in a few years with the rebuilt temple, the red heifer, and all of that other stuff. And, you know, George Norrie asked me on Sunday, you know, Jeff, what do you think about Armageddon? Are we in the end times? What are the signs going to be? And I'm just reminded, and I shared this with George and the audience, that Yeshua said, and the Pharisees came to him and asked him the very same thing. What will be the sign of the coming of the kingdom? What will be the sign of the end? What will be the sign of the great culmination of all things? And Yeshua said these words that I keep saying them, but nobody wants to believe them. They want to continue going on with their foolishness. Yeshua said, the kingdom does not come with observation. Literally rendered in the English, the coming of the kingdom is not accompanied with any outward signs. There's not going to be a rapture that is legitimate. There's not going to be a second coming that's legitimate. There's not going to be a tribulation that's legitimate. There's not going to be a future Antichrist. There's not going to be a rebuilt temple that has anything to do with Bible prophecy. There's not going to be a damn red heifer. I don't know why that red heifer gets under my skin, but that red heifer, if I saw a red heifer, I'd kill him. We'd have a red heifer barbecue. I don't know what it is. A red heifer just gets under my skin. The rebuilt temple, all of that stuff. It's not going to happen, not because Jeffrey Daugherty says it's not going to happen, but because Yeshua of Nazareth said it's not going to happen. And he said, the kingdom of God does not come with outward signs, for the kingdom of God has already come, and it's inside you. And Yeshua said that the kingdom of heaven is in us, the spark of divinity is in us, and the reason why you have a hard time believing that is because you've accepted the lie that the original sin is in you. You don't have the original sin inside you. You got the spark of divinity. And as soon as you start realizing that and growing that and nurturing that, you won't fall anymore for the Virgin Marys and forest fires. You won't fall anymore for the tales and woe of woe and doom about the end of the world coming this Wednesday, next Wednesday, or any Wednesday. Because I said this on Coast to Coast. Let me say this again for everyone to hear. There's not one word of biblical prophecy left to be fulfilled, except for some things that John told us to watch out about for false flags. There's not one word of biblical prophecy left to be fulfilled. It all was fulfilled by AD 70, and Revelation is John's writing to warn us about a great false flag deception. And we're going to go through and prove that as we do strictly from the Bible over the next a few weeks as we get into the alien agenda and the New Testament final message of the last apostle. And there's another story. Archaeological discoveries may prove portions of the Old Testament to be accurate. And, you know, I kind of get I get tarred and feathered. I get, my baby thrown out with the bathwater a lot. Oh, Darty doesn't believe the Bible. Jeff doesn't believe the Bible. Jeff doesn't believe the Bible. Well, I've never, ever said I don't believe the Bible. In fact, I've said I do believe the Bible. I believe the Bible remains, both Old and New Testaments, a profitable study. I spend all of my life where I'm not trying to keep the lights on in the Bible studying it. I believe the Old Testament contains the Word of God. I believe the New Testament contains the Word of God. I believe the Old and New Testament are profitable sources of learning and inspiration and spiritual truth. I also believe the Old Testament and the New Testament contains a lot of things other than the Word of God. The Bible contains a lot of the words of men. It contains a lot of dung, and it contains a portion of diamonds. That's why we have the diamond New Testament that we compiled to getting rid of the dung and leaving only the diamonds. But there will be archaeological discoveries that prove portions of the Old Testament to be accurate, because guess what? Portions of the Old Testament are accurate. Portions of the New Testament are accurate. And conversely, portions of the Old Testament are inaccurate. Portions of the New Testament are also inaccurate. And before you start pulling your hair out and screaming and yelling at me for being a heretic. You all claim to hold near and dear the concept of the separation of church and state, yet you want to hold on to the King James Bible and say every jot, every tittle, every line is 100% the Word of God. Well, guess what? The King James Bible is the state editing, compiling, and publishing the defining work of the church. The King James Bible is the personification of the union of church and state. So at least be consistent. I mean, and I talked about this with George on Sunday. We can talk about Planet X. We can talk about reptilians. We can talk about flat earth. We can talk about hollow moon. We can talk about hollow earth. We can talk about how did they build the pyramids. We can talk about aliens. We can talk about all of these amazing things and allow ourselves a lot of discovery and be open to a lot of possibilities. But when it comes to a 2,000-year-old document that has passed through the hands of at least two world empires, all of a sudden we can't even ask if we should not take another look at this document and look at it objectively. Even when I've proven to you without a shadow of a doubt that the New Testament has been hopelessly scrambled and altered and jumbled on purpose, somehow you still won't think about that or ask that question. And if you won't even consider it, I can't help you. Best that you go ahead and go watch America's Got Talent or whatever is on tonight. And there's a woman who claims to be from a parallel universe. You know, I don't know a lot about, all about that. I certainly think it's possible, but it's an interesting read. Woman claims to be from a parallel universe. Very interesting stuff. And I know Rocky Stucci's with us tonight. He has to go rather quickly, and I wanted for him to pop on real quick, and I wanted to ask him a question, and I wanted to discuss something with him. Rocky, are you with us?
I'm here, brother.
All righty. I have a question for you, and this is something that Dr. Toltec brought up to me several times, and it's something that, you know, he being a shaman and also a medical doctor, very highly learned individual, knows this through practical experience and also through years and years of devout, you know, spiritual study and experience. And I myself, not having as much, but I also do agree with this, both in a spiritual concept, both of seeing it and observing it, and also just in an intellectual concept. Now, brother, Dr. Toltec believes that in the what we call the astral realm, Rocky, or wherever the spirits are, the ghosts are, the things we deal with in the paranormal, that there's a lot of entities there that, as Dr. Toltec says, are cuttings from the vegetables. And what he means by that, if I understand him correctly, is that when a person that is here on Earth in a body ascends from Earth to the area that's beyond the astral, many times things that aren't strong enough, aren't worthy, will fall off into the astral realm. It's kind of like how we used to see the rockets going up to the moon and the stages would fall off and burn up. And those things, those cuttings of the vegetables, are meant to disintegrate and fertilize, in Dr. Toltec's term. And it's, you know, I'm sure that's not literal, but maybe it is. But they're supposed to fertilize the astral realm. But a lot of these things, before they do disintegrate, get a hold of a person or get a hold of some energy, and they are allowed to perpetuate and maintain. And if they can get enough energy and intention from people, they can remain alive when they are meant to be burned up or disintegrated. And my question to you as a paranormal expert, as I launch into the paranormal realm more and more, and when we're dealing with these type of disembodied spirits, I'm concerned a little bit, Rock, and I want to get your response to this about, you know, we're going to try to do work with, I'm calling it, for lack of a better term right now, astral salvation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, try to, if we're doing paranormal cleansing, try to deal with the spirit itself and not just the structure or the people. But my question is, do we risk, and my concern is, and I'll let you address it, my concern is that by addressing a lot of these spirits or these disembodied entities, we may be risking the possibility of keeping alive cuttings of vegetables that were supposed to be disintegrated and go away, and our efforts and our contact might be keeping them alive when they should not be alive. I know those terms aren't exact, but what's your thought on that, Rocky? And is that a concern that you would have, or do you think I'm just totally crazy?
No, not at all, Jeff. I think, referring to what you're saying, I think a perfect example would be like a house that is down in Iowa. It's called the Villisca House. And this is where six children were murdered and two parents were murdered. And every night there is a paranormal investigation in this home. And I often wonder, if there wasn't paranormal investigations in this home, would this house be as haunted as it is? So is there a way that we are feeling the vehicle? So I believe that sometimes that our attention towards something energizes exactly what we're looking for. Now, there's an experiment done in the 70s. I believe it was called the Charlie Project, where people went into a home that was not haunted per se. I don't know a better term for it, but they manifested the belief that it was haunted. And after 2 months, they started getting prominent paranormal activity. So what does the physical human, what do we do to either draw something to us or to empower something that's barely there to manifest into a more of a reality into our physical world? So it is something to definitely take caution on. But as we spoke of last week, I also believe that even in that astral realm, there is good and evil, and that we have the potential and the possibility to help those, I'm trying to use the right terminology here, to help those excel into a higher plane of existence, if that makes any sense at all.
Right. So I guess basically the only answer is that it comes down to the individual integrity of paranormal workers, right?
I believe it does. And, you know, if people go into this stuff with the wrong intention, they pay for it. They pay for it in a very bad way. And there's a lot of stories out there where people went in and they tried to do a Zach Bagans to find out that the next 3 months of their life were upside down. So, you know, somebody like yourself, you know, you have the experience in this field, Jeff, in you know, whether it be biblical or spiritual, you have that spiritual strength. So if I was to say anybody has the potential and the opportunity to do the right things in this field, it would be somebody such as yourself.
Well, I appreciate that, Rocky. I really do. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, you talked about people that went into a place that wasn't haunted and, you know, it manifested that it was. And, you know, it's unusual. Do you know how long it took from the time that it wasn't haunted to where it seemed to be haunted, you know, in months or years?
No, it was a couple of months. And I believe within 3 or 4 months, they actually had legitimate poltergeist activity.
Right. It's, you know, obviously they either called spirits there or created tulpas, but creating a tulpa in 3 or 4 months would be kind of unusual. That's a rather accelerated development of a tulpa to right. that type of a manifestation. Right. But, you know, very fascinating. I appreciate your expert opinion on that, Rocky. And thanks so much for coming on and talking about that with us. Anything that you'd like to add on that note?
No. Like I said last week, I'm very much looking forward to your new journey here, brother, and I think many can learn from your experiences.
Hey, I appreciate that very much. Absolutely. And Dr. Toltec in the chat room says that the consciousnesses that you meet in the dream world deserve to be turned into fertilizer, just like the body disintegrates and returns its nutrients to the earth. The egotistical parts of the dream body that have failed to get to heaven are supposed to return their energy to the dream world. So that's, you know, I think you could correctly term Dr. Toltec an astral warrior. And then there's, you know, people on the other end that would be, I guess, astral evangelists. So you have to come to some type of a sense of balance. And it's going to come down to the intellectual integrity of the people that are trying to do this work. And I know that it sounds crazy. It sounds ridiculous. It is fraught with some, I think danger is probably too strong a word, but the only people I know that are really talking about this right now, of course, would be Cliff Desmond, and we'll talk to Cliff more about this and myself, but I think it, and I hope that it will continue to grow. And Dr. Toltec says, by the way, he does both. the warrior, and these are just my terms, astral warrior and astral evangelist. So I'm actually very very happy to hear that, Dr. Toltec. And I know that you said your internet has been greatly improved down there in Mexico. So hopefully real soon we'll try to work with Rocky and get you on the show, because you're a wealth of information. And folks, you know, Dr. Toltec, you may not agree with everything that he says, and he might upset you from time to time, but I guarantee you that he will never bore you. He's very, very interesting. And this is also very good. Getting lost soul fragments to rest in peace. So you've got to have some finesse. You've got to have some skill, because you can take a fragment that wants to stay alive and you can present the reality to it and get it to actually go into rest in peace. As Dr. Toltec says, you're really putting it out of its misery. So it's just a fascinating world. But, you know, with guys like Cliff Desmond, who has years and years and years of spiritual experience, you know, me, I've, you know, spent 20 years in the exorcism field and, you know, now have over 30 years of experience. So, and the more stuff you know, the more you realize that you need to know more stuff. And that's what this is all about. And I think it's a growing a field. And as we get out on the road, especially when we get on the Unindoctrinate Yourself tour, where we can actually go and begin to do the paranormal cleansing, be it people, places, things, we can also help facilitate this. And I think that I've been talking about this, thinking about this, but I think there's a great need. And Cliff has also kind of nudged me towards this. We had talked at one time about making the NCK Center, you know, New Cosmic Knowledge. That's kind of the overall umbrella of what I do. And we talked about having an NCK Center, you know, something like a fellowship. But of course, when I'm going to be on the road going from place to place, having an NCK Center would be very problematic. We're going to figure out a way to do it virtually so we can have, you know, pretty much a virtual fellowship, if you will, NCK Center, and we'll have, you know, regular meetings where we can get together virtually. We'll have videos, we'll have teachings, and hopefully we'll find people like Cliff Desmond that will want to take ownership and have perhaps even local centers and groups where we can actually build a network of places across the country and even across the world. And as I continue to do tours, of course, I can stop at those places. And I think it's something that we have to do. It's something that we must do. It's something that we're going to do. And speaking of what we're going to do, we're going to talk about aliens in the New Testament here when we come back from the break. And this weekend, I'm going to be in San Antonio, Texas. So if you're in the San Antonio, Texas area, Saturday, beginning at 9, I think, and going all the way through the evening at the Henry Cisneros Convention Center in San Antonio, Texas, is the Phantom Fest. It's FANTOMFEST, PhantomFest.com. And there, it's really an ingenious idea. It's kind of a three-pronged convention, if you will. They have a horror movie, you know, independent horror movie premiere and convention. So lots of these independent horror movies and people that are enthusiasts in that area. They have the whole cosplay thing where people dress up in these fantastical costumes and do whatever they do. I'm looking forward to seeing that, actually. And then they have a full-blown paranormal conference as well. I mean, people from Sci-Fi Channel, people from History Channel. I don't have the lineup in front of me, or I'd read it out to you, and you certainly know some of these people. And they'll have me there as well. So it's going to be a great day, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it and listening to the other people. They have a past life regression, I think, on Friday night, and then Saturday night there's actually a paranormal investigation. I've never been involved in one of those. I've been asked to participate in that, so I'll check that out and hope that there are people that are as have the integrity of people like Rocky, and if not, we'll set them straight. But we'll be back after the break, and we're going to talk about alien agenda in the New Testament. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian Whistleblower, and we'll BRB.
puppet paradigm broadcast platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of elected programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows, go to www.ipbn-fm.com and follow us on Twitter at IPBN_FM. IPBN Alternative Talk Radio.
It's not about anything else.
Go to your room and lock the door. Cause when you try it once, you want to try it some more. Size doesn't matter, and that's a fact. It might be small, but it's a big impact. Oh. Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well. Enjoy yourself, we won't tell. Everybody does it, they like it a lot. Just don't get caught. It takes a few minutes if you don't delay. Take your time, make it last all day.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of cold nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well.
Enjoy yourself, we won't tell.
Corn Nuts, an intensely crunchy corn snack, comes in 7 nut-busting flavors. Bust a nut at a convenience store near you.
Out of Jeddah in the M&M Survivor Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's gotta last till Dubai.
Okay, Red. I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water! It's all gone!
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with 2 T's, ALANROBERTS.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
To the largest spiritual network on the planet, the Jeffrey Daugherty Show.
And growing larger, thank you, Cliff Desmond, our Skype, not Skype, we're on Skype right now. Our Twitter audience is growing amazingly. And the website, jeffreydaugherty.com, christianwhistleblower.com, is just absolutely blowing up. Of course, being linked up with Coast to Coast, you know, helped out a lot. But I think that we're gaining some momentum now that we haven't had before. And, you know, we may have the proverbial tiger by the tail. And I think it's a good thing because we're about to really explode and get this new cosmic knowledge, these new ways of thinking, these stretching of paradigms, both through IPBNFM. .com and through our, you know, ground on the ground, boots on the ground type strategy going out on the tour. It's going to be very, very exciting. And if you have any, you know, comments or recommendations for me, you know, feel free to send them to jeffreydaugherty.com. Just go on the website, click the contact button. And I do at this point, I still see all of those personally. It's getting a little tougher, but give me a few days and we'll definitely talk about and respond to whatever you send to me. Now, we were on Coast to Coast AM on Sunday, and we talked about alien agenda in the New Testament, and I wanted to talk about that tonight and possibly throughout the next few weeks, as long as it remains interesting and as long as it remains relevant. But I think that it is something that, you know, we're moving into this paranormal realm, and it's also important, you know, as you know, George Norrie was talking about. And whatever you think about George Norrie, here's a guy that probably gets more information, paranormal information thrown at him than probably anybody else in the world, because he's constantly got people like me, you know, trying to get on the radio, and he's constantly hearing, you know, literally 7 days a week. I guess he takes a day or two off, but he's hearing things and seeing things that are on the cutting edge of the paranormal realm. And he made the statement that he's starting to see and understand and realize that it's not E.T. phone home anymore. Actually, I said that, but I was paraphrasing what he was saying. That the whole alien agenda, if you will, the whole alien genre, in his opinion, and I mean, here's a guy that knows, or at least hears more about it, is exposed to it more than anybody else on the planet, arguably. And he says that he feels like the whole alien thing is taking a malevolent turn, and he is beginning to feel and sense from a majority, or a growing number at least, of experts in the field that it's not the nice, you know, helpful, you know, Billy Meyer beam type of aliens anymore. Everybody's starting to get a sense of foreboding about it. And I found that fascinating, because I don't speak to George. You know, I've spoke to him a few times, but mainly just on Coast to Coast. And when he's on my show, he's been before. And so it's not like George and I are talking all the time. So for me to realize and write this book, that, you know, the final message of the last apostle has basically two halves. The first half is talking about the alien agenda in the New Testament. The second half is John identifying what that alien agenda means, how it was perpetuated, and why it's being continued, and really what the end game of that alien agenda in the New Testament is. And the end game is that John is warning us that in the I have to think the not too distant future, but of course we all think at all times that we're almost in the end times. That's just something that humans do for some reason. But John has warned us, that the Apostle John has warned us, that this whole rapture idea, this whole second coming idea, this whole tribulation idea is going to be leveraged by a malevolent entity that is going to clothe himself in the persona of what we think of societally or culturally as Jesus, and is going to present himself coming back as this Jesus character, but it's not going to be Jesus at all in the way that we think of or know of Jesus. It's going to be an entity that has intentionally covered his own name, and John says that very extensive, very plainly, and is proclaiming himself to be the Word of God, which of course is associated with Jesus, the Jesus character. But more than that, when you're talking about proclaiming yourself to be the Word of God, it goes back to the words of John in chapter John 1, chapter 1, that Yeshua was the Word, the Word, the Word, the Elohim that was creating with the other Elohim this entire planet. You know, the heavens and the earth were created by the Word, who was an Elohim. So more than just saying, hey, I'm Jesus, he's really leveraging and usurping the identity of not just plastic Jesus, not just the cardboard cutout Jesus that's been created by religion, but he's actually trying to usurp the place, the power, the prestige, and the holiness, if you will, of Yeshua, the Word, the Elohim incarnate. So it's like George was saying, and like many of the experts that he's in contact with, it seems to be that things are turning for a nefarious or towards a nefarious turn, and it's towards a nefarious going towards some nefarious stuff. And Rocky said that, you know, to Dr. Toltec, he is interested in hearing more on his his comments, and we're gonna get Dr. Toltec on. We'll take a shot. You know, we used to have a show together, in fact, but it's just the his internet became problematic down where he is. But hopefully, that's become a lot better, so we'll be able to have him on and talk about some fascinating things. But you know, and George Norrie asked me about how do I think, what's this false flag going to be? And there's really a few possibilities, and we'll just talk here. We're friends for a few minutes. You know, Dr. Stephen Hawking has said that if aliens come, they're coming kicking ass and taking names. You know, they're coming to destroy us. And if, in fact, that's true, if an alien race comes to planet Earth to destroy it, to conquer it, to cleanse it, there is absolutely no reason why they would clothe their intentions in human religious imagery. So if Dr. Hawking's right, and aliens do come that are malevolent, they will just come, like I said, you know, I should say earmuffs, kicking ass and taking names, un-earmuffs. So it won't be malevolent aliens coming pretending that they're Jesus, because they wouldn't waste the time or the energy to project themselves as a Jesus character. They just come in here blasting and taking over. Now, it is possible that the governments of the world, or the governments of any particular nation like the United States, could use holographic technology or covert technology that we're not aware of to present an alien attack. And it might be just a straight alien attack that may not be an alien attack. It's just a fake alien attack. Or the government could actually, you know, use holographic technology even to have a Jesus type event. And how easy would it be for, I mean, and I listened to Rocky's show last week, and this, you know, with Obama and Hitler and some of the parallels there. I mean, how hard would it be, and how unbelievable would it be, or how, I mean, it's not a real stretch to think that. And I know I'm not predicting, I'm just saying it. This is how it could happen. I mean, it's this easy for it to happen, I guess is what I'm trying to say. This is not a prediction. This is not something I'm saying going to happen. This is just an example of how easy it would be to make something like this happen. I mean, how hard is it to believe that these a Jesus figure could descend and, you know, take out the bad guys and then say, this Barack Hussein Obama, this great man, is my representative and my leader here on this planet. Heed him and follow him and let him be my representative here on Earth. And then, you know, the Jesus character gets back in a ship or goes away or whatever. That's not outside the realm of possibility. If it is outside the realm of possibility, it's just outside the realm of possibility. So that's something that could happen. But what I really think is going to happen is this malevolent entity, who I'm not going to identify at this point, as some of you have listened in the past or have read, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But this malevolent entity will appear, and I just about choked myself for some reason. He will appear and cover his own name. John clearly tells us he covers his own name, and he presents himself to be this Jesus character, and he will come back and personally assume the place, the power, the person of Jesus. And also, he's trying to usurp the place, power, and person of Yeshua, the true Word of God, and to take control of the planet. So that's what I believe John is warning us is going to happen. Now, you don't have to believe my version of that, but the Apostle John warned us that something like that is going to take place. So what I'm trying to say to you is, regardless of what you've always been taught about the rapture, the second coming, the tribulation, it's not truly biblical prophecy in the sense of it's real and it's what the apostles taught. The apostles of Yeshua never taught word one about the rapture. The apostles of Yeshua never taught word one about the tribulation. The apostles of Yeshua never taught word one about anything called the second coming. That was made up after Yeshua was gone, after most of the apostles of Yeshua were gone, and it was made up between AD 35 and AD 95-ish, and John, in his final message to the last apostle, called these people out, revealed this nefarious agenda to us, warned us about it, and warned us in excruciating, explicit detail of how we could both know and understand. And of course, George Norrie asked me, well, Jeff, how do we know? And the only real answer to that is, well, I didn't want to say read my book, but it's read the Bible, the book of Revelation, in its literal interpretation and understand what John is saying. So I didn't want to say read my book, but read my book would be about the easiest way to do it. Or you can just get in touch with the divine yourself and read in the Greek English interlinear. And what the divine revealed to me, the divine will certainly reveal to you. There's nothing special about me. I don't have a secret decoder ring. I actually want to get some rings, but I don't have any rings now. I don't have any special anointing from on high. I'm not a chosen messenger of God. I'm not anything like that. I'm just a guy that got himself to the place where I said, I don't care. You know, my give a damn is busted beyond all repair. And I don't care anymore about what people think about me, about what people say about me. I don't care anymore about conforming to any standards. Now, I do hope to work with some organizations in the future. And if you ask me to work with you, if you bring me to your fellowship, if you bring me to your conference, I will certainly be courteous and responsible and stay within the realms and boundaries of that you asked me to stay within. I'm not trying to say that I'm just a bull in a china shop, but I have no doctrinal beliefs to defend. I have no doctrinal positions to defend. I don't have any organizational beliefs or tenets that I have to adhere to. All I have to adhere to is when I'm at a place, the good etiquette and responsibility and courtesy of the presenters. But I'm here to bring all of this message. And the reason, all it takes is for you to get to that same place where you don't care what people say, you don't care what people think, and you have totally flushed all of your preconceived notions. They were here today flushing out my septic tank. And they took it all out of there, man. There was a lot of stuff in there. We won't go into the contents, but they removed it. And it's fresh. It's empty. It's cleaned, you know, relatively. How clean can a hole in the ground that contains that stuff be? But that's kind of like our minds, our spirits, if you will, in religious things when we have been 2,000 years indoctrinated in Christianity. Your mind is like a septic tank, and it's been filled with other people's excrement. It's been filled with other people's water and solid waste. And you've been storing it up as your own for all these years. And people come to you and say, you really should let, no, I'm not letting go of this. This is my toxic waste. And you hold that toxic waste and you cling to that toxic waste and you pet that toxic waste, and it's your toxic waste. It's your pet toxic waste, and you don't want to let it go. You just keep, and the older you get and the more you know, more you just get more and more of this waste. It's other people's waste. It's other people's liquid and solid waste, and you're just, oh, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, and I'm not going to let it go. But guess what? Your life is a lot better when you let go of other people's, you know what? Why don't you just do it as an experiment? Get your spiritual septic tank pumped. That's what I did. I remember the day I was sitting in my house, in my living room. This was back before the internet exploded. And I had probably 25 or 30 books opened and hockey pucks on the books to keep the pages from turning. And I banished my children from that room because I had to study. And I was breaking down the Greek New Testament for myself. I wasn't believing anything I was told. I wasn't believing anything I was taught. I laid it all aside, and I was rebuilding my beliefs, starting in Matthew chapter 1, because I hadn't even come across the realization of the truth that the New Testament was produced out of order. And I began from Matthew 1, verse 1, back to the Greek, baby, boom, 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 all the way to Revelation 22, 21. That took a while. And that's why I come from the place that I come from. And I'm on coast to coast. And, you know, it's funny. I've had thousands of emails, and I've probably gone through about 1,100 of them so far. Many very, very complimentary. Many very, very nice. And I've had maybe two or three nasty grams. And it's very interesting, two or three nasty grams. Now, of the people that called into the show, I think there might have been six callers, and five of them were nasty. Five of them were mean and ornery and against, maybe. I mean, there was probably maybe one or two positives and five or six negatives. I can't remember how many actually called in. But it's interesting to me because the people that call in when I'm on coast to coast are always mostly nasty, but the people that write me, I never ever get a nasty gram, and thousands of people write me. So I facetiously wonder, oh, well, the people that call in aren't smart enough to write. And that's why they're against me, because they're not smart enough to read and write. Of course, I say that facetiously, but yet it's a little bit of a subtle jab, because I mean, the people that call negative, people that write positive, interesting juxtaposition. I don't really understand it. It's very, very interesting to me that that's how it breaks down, but that is the way it breaks down. So, but all I did on Coast to Coast, and if you haven't listened to the program, go and listen to it on my website, right on the front page. All I did, and I talked with George at the beginning. I said, George, let's just stay to the text. Let's just stay to the science. Let's just stay to the facts. Let's not venture off into religious implications. Of course, George, you know, pulled me a couple times in that direction. But what I wanted to do was just give people the facts and let them draw their own implications. And we stayed right to the text. All I did was read the literal New Testament. I just read it. I didn't comment on it. I didn't expand on it. I didn't expound on it. I just read it literally word for word. And the first caller calls in and says, you two are, what'd she say, nuts. And she called George a nut. He said, oh, me or him? And the lady says, George, you're a nut. And of course, George, he got kind of upset with her, but this lady was like, God is God, and he's in the heavens, and he could strike both of you deaf right now. He could strike both of you dead right now. And I just want to say, lady, all I did was read straight from the Bible. So, and if you're of that lady's thought and of that lady's mind, when you're screaming at me, all I'm doing is reading the literal translation of the New Testament to you. So if you're really upset, if you're really angry, if you're really full of wrath, it's not me. Like George said, they're killing the messenger. It's not me. I didn't write the New Testament. All I do is tell you the news. It's like yelling at the newscaster. It's like yelling, more accurately, at the paper boy. It's like shooting at the paper boy because you didn't like the headline. And I understand where you're coming from, because when it first started happening to me, I reacted the same way. And that's what I told George about that lady. She was very mean, very upset, very angry. But when you first are a, you know, you're a born again, spirit filled, Holy Ghost, you know, red hot, blood bought Christian, and you start realizing, uh-oh, something's wrong. I'm reading the Bible and it's not lining up with what they've always taught me. I'm reading the Bible and it's contradicting what they've always taught me. Most people's first reaction is anger. It's fight or flight. And most people's first reaction is fight. And I that's what I shared with George. I said, I don't think she's a mean lady. I think she's a scared lady. And there's many of you out there right now that you're being mean to me. But I know you're not mean. I know you're scared. And if you're scared, I'm here to help you. If you're really mean, don't waste my time. Don't have enough to spend it with you, because there's scared people I can help, and I don't need to deal with mean people. It's like where Yeshua said, don't cast your pearls before swine. If you're a pig, be a pig and go off and do what pigs do. It's not your time, because I don't deal with pigs. I just don't deal with pigs. Don't have time to deal with the swine. I will deal with no swine before it's time. But if you're scared, I'm your guy. If you're searching, I'm your guy. If you need some guidance, I'm your guy. I will do what I can to help you. I will do what I can to bring facts to you for your consideration. But you have to know this. I'm going to come to you from the New Testament, and mostly from the New Testament alone. And I'm going to come to you with the literal translation of the New Testament. It's going to be the medicine, and it's going to be straight. And sometimes the medicine doesn't taste good, but it makes you better. And this medicine, it really is sweet medicine. It really is good medicine. It really is helpful medicine. It really is the elixir of life. It literally is the elixir of the gods, of the Elohim. But you're so into what you're into that you don't understand how good it is, because you're so used to the stuff that's wrong. It's like a person that is so used to eating processed sugar, processed sugar, processed sugar, processed sugar, and all of a sudden you start to eat some nice organic fruit and it doesn't even really taste sweet to you, because your taste buds have been perverted by the creations of men. And the same thing happens to your spiritual taste buds. You get some real organic, straight from the original language truth, and it sounds false to you because you're so used to the bad stuff. Like Mark Twain said, it's much easier to convince someone of a lie than it is to convince them they've been lied to. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying. That doesn't mean we're going to stop being the Christian whistleblower. That doesn't mean we're going to stop shining the light of truth into the dark corners of orthodoxy. In fact, we're just getting started. We're just getting started. We're just getting revved up. We're just getting wound up. And I may upset you. I may be somebody you don't like. I might be somebody that you wish would go away. But brother, but sister, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's fixing to get real. It's fixing to be taken to a whole nother level. And man, you ain't seen nothing yet. We're fixing to lock and load on the Christian Whistleblower. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends.
In biology,
in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
We're here asking people from all over what they think of Lipton green tea. Let's hear what people from Texas have to say.
Mmm.
How about China?
Mmm.
Germany?
Mmm.
How about people from the North Pole?
Mmm.
Or Mars?
Mmm.
What about mimes? Oh, right. People with their jaws wired shut?
Oh.
Yeah, a barbershop quartet.
Mmm.
Oh, you guys are great. How about race car drivers?
Mmm.
Yeah, what about you, high school glee club, here on a field trip? Well, that settles it. It sounds like everyone loves the taste of Lipton green tea. With its protective antioxidants from real tea, it's not just good for you, it's mmm to you. Lipton tea can do that.
IPDN. IPBN.
The Intrepid Paradigm Broadcast Platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of electric programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network.
And now, back to the Edward Snowden of the New Testament, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Darty.
Welcome back. This is the Christian Whistleblower Show. I'm Jeffrey Darty, zooming into our second hour. And we're talking tonight, or we're getting ready at least, to talk about the alien agenda in the New Testament. And what we're going to get into it tonight, right now, we're going to talk about some of the actual New Testament renderings. But you know, what we've got to realize is that this is the New Testament, and what we're hearing is in the New Testament and the New Testament alone. And the interesting thing is, I think when you're talking about any type of a subject, you should try to find a standard baseline for discussion of that subject. And when we're talking about alien abductions and alien interaction and all types of you know, first kind, second time, third kind, where the standard of the standard evidence or the standard baseline is the Bullard's outline and the Nyman's alternative outline of abduction. And they've established over, I don't know what it's been, what was this, started in the 1930s or 40s? It's been from then till now by a painstaking investigation of every single reported case of alien involvement, and they've come up with what they call the outline and the alternative outline. So this is the scholastic scientific baseline, and I think that as we look at alien agenda in the New Testament, or we purport to look at alien agenda in the New Testament, it behooves us, if we're really going to be scholars and if we're really going to be credible, that we apply the standard outline and the alternative outline to what I claim to be the alien agenda in the New Testament. And remarkably, each and every one of the alien agenda occurrences in the New Testament conforms remarkably to the standard and alternative outlines. The baseline of alien abduction phenomena, the occurrences of the alien agenda within the New Testament, is in perfect conformity to that. I find that rather remarkable. Now, I'm not going to go through the full outline, but here's just kind of a Cliff Notes version. Usually there's an anxious anticipation of something unknown on the part of the one that deals with the aliens. Then there's a capture where the abductee is forcibly taken to an apparent alien spacecraft, or where they're just rendered immobile in their own location. Then there's what they call psychophysical imposition and interaction and examination, where alien beings forcibly perform medical and scientific procedures on the abductee, who has been rendered docile and incapable of resistance. Then there's a conference and reassurance of positive feelings, and often a sense of purpose is given to the abductee by the abductors. And it often includes what is called a theophany, where an abductee has a profound mystical experience accompanied by a feeling of oneness with God or the universe. And it also often includes a tour where abductees are actually given a tour of their captor's vessel. And I keep trying to check the chat room in case there's some questions or some comments that I want to address. So if you have a question, put it in capital letters. Or if you have something that you want to catch my attention, put it in capital letters. And Rocky, until you have to leave, if you see something that I should notice, feel free to spark me up on that. But the New Testament UFO ET alien agenda conforms remarkably well to these baselines. And something that struck me, the prophet Daniel, and I've been studying the book of Daniel, and man, there's some deep stuff in Daniel. The Lord's in Daniel, the Elohim are in Daniel, the Watchers are in Daniel. There's a lot of deep stuff in Daniel, and I'm just now working through it, so I'm not really prepared to expound too much on that. But Daniel said that the truths of the time of the end, as he called it, are sealed up till the time of the end. And we've always thought in a religious context, oh, it's sealed up by God because God doesn't want us to know it. It's sealed up by God because God doesn't want us to know it, and we won't know it till he tells us. But really, as you dig into the language, it really means that it has been sealed up until for many days, until the time where people are able to understand it. And it's not until the generation right before us and our generation where we've actually had the technological understanding and the cultural context to be able to look at the book of Revelation, the book of Daniel, and some of the other books throughout the Old Testament, and be able to see the fact that there is a definite UFO, ET, and alien imagery within the pages of the Bible. I mean, it is only now coming within a cultural and technological perception to us. You know, now, you know, we've had, you know, 50 years of Star Wars and Star Trek and, you know, X-Files and Battlestar Galactica and V, and if I forgot your favorite show, I'm sorry. But it's now become culturally cognizant of it. We've become able as a civilization to say, oh, I know what that is. Oh, I know what that looks like. Oh, that sounds like this. That sounds like that. Up until, you know, the 50s or so, and really now not until here we are in 2015, have we really got to the place where this has become unsealed, not because God or the divine had it sealed, but because our minds were sealed because we just couldn't understand it yet. So here we are, and all of the secrets of all of the Bible are coming unsealed, not because the divine was a brute and didn't want us to know, but because it's becoming unsealed just because we ourselves are coming available to understand what's going on. And the alien agenda in the New Testament requires no extra biblical books. It requires no Bible code. It requires no secret decoder rings, just the New Testament itself. So let's dive right in here for a moment. And this alien agenda exclusively surrounds the great events in the life of Jesus. There is no alien agenda in the New Testament that is not directly related to a great event in the life of Jesus. Let me say that again. That's remarkable, and it's tremendously important. There is no UFO, ET, or alien imagery in the New Testament that is not directly related to the great events in the life of Jesus. Birth of Jesus, crucifixion of Jesus, resurrection of Jesus, second coming of Jesus. So let's dive into the New Testament itself, and let's start with Matthew chapter 1, because, well, that's where most of you think the New Testament starts. So I'm going to contextualize myself and go with what you know and kind of bring you to what's real. How's that sound? Matthew chapter 1, when his mother Mary, speaking of Jesus, of course, when his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Lord. Okay, King James Version makes it sound very nice, very holy, you know, very normal. But when you break that down into the literal English translation from the Greek, I'm not adding anything, I'm not subtracting anything, at no time do my fingers leave my hands, I'm just giving you the literal interpretation. She discovered she was holding in her womb something from the Lord. Striking to me, I don't know how you feel about this, but striking that the word for baby isn't used. The word for infant isn't used. The word for child isn't used. The words certainly exist in the language, but they're simply not used. Why? Matthew doesn't tell us why. But Matthew said that she was holding in her womb something, not some baby, not some infant, not some child, not even some man, not even some human. And those words are all there. But she was holding something in her womb. Something in her womb. Luke, who actually wrote before Matthew, so this is really the first writing of the apostles of Yeshua in reference to the birth of Jesus, Luke, and he was a doctor, much like our own Dr. Toltec. Luke was a physician. And Luke was more of, I think, of a general practitioner, kind of get your hands dirty kind of a doctor. I think Dr. Toltec is now more in the psychiatric realm, but I'm sure that in residency they're all required to do all the wet work, so to speak. But Luke was a doctor. And when Luke writes, he is known in scholarly terms to use very exacting language. And of course you would expect Luke to use exacting language, especially as it relates to medical or anatomical type of terminology. So here's Luke, and Luke writes this in Luke chapter 1. You are highly favored, speaking to Mary, you're highly favored, and you're blessed among women. Thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son. Sounds very benevolent. Sounds very peaceful and wonderful. When you render it literally in English, my friends, he says, you're highly favored. And then he says these words, you will be taken hold of or seized in your womb. Thou shalt conceive in thy womb. That sounds so nice. The real dirty, regular, real language is, you will be taken hold of or seized in your womb. That's a little different. Luke says, then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you, and the power of the highest shall overshadow you. Again, oh, that sounds so wonderful. But what Luke is saying is, you shall be overtaken as in an attack, and the power, might, and strength of the Lord will envelop you. Put that together. You're highly favored. You're going to be taken hold of or seized in your womb. You'll be overtaken as in an attack, and the power, might, and strength of the Lord will envelop you. Now, notice how this lines up perfectly with the abduction outlines. First of all, there's that reassurance and sense of purpose. You are highly favored, blessed among women. Then comes the capture. You're seized in your womb. Then comes the immobility. You're overtaken as in an attack. You're enveloped and rendered immobile by the power of the Lord. And then, of course, comes the invasive examinations in this girl's womb. And then she's left with something deposited in her womb from this entity called the Lord. Now think about this. Dr. Luke is telling us that a mysterious spiritual entity is declaring to a teenage girl. And remember, you're talking about a girl 13, 14, 15 years old. You know, I've had two of those. You know, my daughters were both 13, 14, or 15 at one time, believe it or not. And she's told that her womb is going to be seized. Now, I don't have a womb, but what I do have, I know it wouldn't be too pleasant to have it seized. And she's overtaken and incapacitated from an attack by a power that completely envelops her and then deposits something in her womb. Now, if you could get your head out of the B-I-B-L-E, that's the book for me. If you could get your head out of Sunday school, if you could get your head out of Kumbaya, if you could get your head out of Michael, row your boat ashore, if you could get your head out of your religious conditioning, and if you could just objectively look at this rendering of the literal language of the New Testament, I didn't add, didn't subtract, didn't expound, just read it to you. And the simple, unavoidable fact is that in modern objective terms, what we just had happen sounds exactly like a forced artificial insemination during a classic alien abduction scenario. Dr. Luke could have been on Coast to Coast himself, and he would have been perfectly in context telling that same story to George Norrie. Now, did you notice that all I did was read the text? Did you notice that I didn't add, I didn't subtract? All I did was gave you the literal rendering out of Matthew chapter 1 and out of Luke chapter 1. And if you're a devoted believer in the Bible, how do you respond to that? How do you react to that when a guy just gives you what it says and it seems to raise questions about what you've always believed? Again, you come to a fork in the road, take it, and you have to decide which fork you're going to take. And again, Dr. Luke, Physician Luke, calls what was deposited into Mary's womb a thing of supernatural origin. That holy thing literally translates to that thing of supernatural origin. Not a child, not a baby, not an infant, not a boy, not a girl, not even a human. The terms are not used. He certainly could have used them. This is a writer known for exacting language, especially in things medical and anatomical. The language was available to him, but instead he chose to term that which was deposited into the womb of Mary a thing of supernatural origin. To me, it's amazing. To me, it's staggering. To me, it's stunning. And I'm interested in hearing what some of you think or what some of you would say about that in the chat room. And as you ponder, we'll move on to the birth of Jesus. Jeffrey, are you going to tell me that there was alien involvement in the birth of Jesus? Well, I have just shown you that there seems to be alien imagery, UFO imagery, ET imagery in the Annunciation and in the impregnation. What exactly happened in the birth or at the birth, that great event that we've all, you know, sung about? And, you know, you drive down the street in a couple of months and you're going to see these mangers, and you're going to see all of the, you know, you're going to be sick to death of the Christmas carols. And it's a time where everybody's, you know, all about this. But what really happened that night in Bethlehem? Well, it says in Luke chapter 2, "And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid." Of course, this is the shepherds out in the fields around Jerusalem when the angel of the Lord came to them to tell them about what was going on and what was transpiring over there in the manger. The angel of the Lord appears. The glory of the Lord shines round about. They're sore afraid. What does the literal English say? The literal English says, "The messenger of the Lord appeared as in an attack, and blinding brightness shone round about them." The language, folks, suggests, and you're not going to believe this, but you're going to have to look it up yourself in the interlinear. The language actually suggests that these shepherds were encased in blinding columns of light. Absolutely classic UFO, ET, alien imagery. Every movie you see, every TV show you see, people get encapsulated in these blinding columns of light. It's not accidental that that is the imagery that has perpetuated, and it's not accidental that that's the very imagery that was created here around this Bethlehem birth event of Jesus. And again, all I'm doing is reading the literal text. So here's these poor shepherds. All of a sudden, this messenger appears as in an attack. They find themselves encased in these blinding columns of light. And then suddenly, with the angel, was a multitude of the heavenly hosts. All of a sudden, there was a great crowd like a heavenly army. So one minute, these simple shepherds are out there minding their own business, doing whatever it is shepherds do when they're out there in the middle of the field with a bunch of sheep. I have no idea what it is, but they were doing it. The next minute, there's this single entity that comes upon them like an attack, and they're encased in these columns of blinding light. And then before they know it, there's an entire heavenly army that freezes them with fear, again, immobilizing them in these blinding columns of light, once again conforming remarkably well to the classic abduction outlines. Folks, again, I'm reading directly from the New Testament. I'm reading directly from the New Testament. Cliff asked the question, "Is an unborn baby a thing of natural origin?" Well, I mean, a doctor would have to say yes. I mean, what else is a newborn baby than a thing of natural origin? It's actually a thing of the natural origin of life. I mean, you know, it's the birds and the bees, right? You know, mama and daddy do what they do, and then the stork brings a little baby, right? So an unborn baby, a fertilized embryo, if you want to go that route, a fertilized fetus, a young child after consummation or after fertilization, a child, it would have to be a thing of natural origin, at least the way I look at it. And my point was, Cliff, that if Dr. Luke was trying to say that this was a normal, regular impregnation and that this was a, you know, a regular baby to be born, I would ask why he did not use language that indicated that. To use language that indicates that it is a thing rather than a human, and that is of supernatural origin rather than of the natural order, to me, at least brings up the question of why, and not saying what you should believe, but asking, something sounds really weird here. And Dr. Luke's perspective, use of the word thing as thing, not baby. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Why would he call it a thing and not a baby, especially when he is a doctor? So regardless of what you believe, regardless of what you think, I think that we've already said enough. And when we come back from the break, we're going to look at, believe it or not, alien agenda in the crucifixion of Jesus. Regardless of what your position is, regardless of what your thought is on what we're talking about tonight, it has certainly caused you to take a fresh perspective look at the New Testament. Man, it doesn't always say what I thought it said. It doesn't always say what they told me it said. Maybe I should think about this. Maybe I should review this. Maybe I should look at this. And Cliff says it brings up another issue like abortion. And I believe George brought it up last night, and I didn't want to use this word, but it was, it's possible to throw out there the word rape. And I mean, you're talking about the Immaculate Conception is what it's been called for 2,000 years. And yet when you look at it in objective language, it looks more like an extraterrestrial rape. You know, that was what George Norrie asked. That was what George Norrie brought up. And I'm saying, folks, was the Immaculate Conception an extraterrestrial rape? Well, a person walking along a dusty beach, a sandy beach that's never read a Bible, trips over one in the sand, opens it up and looks at that and reads it, and they have the cultural context we have. Boy, I tell you, that is very likely a conclusion that they would reach. Dr. Toltec, I've heard that term Sprague before. Is that used detrimentally, or is that just used by purpose of identification? If you get a chance, answer that for me. But as we just take a breath before we go to break and think about what we've heard and think about what is being presented in the New Testament, directly from the New Testament itself, without addition, without subtraction, terminology that is crazy to us, it ought to at least cause us to say, what in the world is going on? Why is the birth of Jesus so surrounded by UFO, ET, alien imagery? I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian Whistleblower. We'll be right back after this.
IPBN,
the Intrepid Paradigm Broadcast Platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of elected programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows,
Egypt, the cradle of civilization, land of the ancient pharaohs, where the living and the dead dwell side by side, and home to Gebel El Silsila. Beautifully situated in Upper Egypt amongst the bulrushes of the iconic River Nile and the ever-advancing sands of the evocative Western Saharan Desert, lays undisturbed 75 million years of Egypt's vast history until now. That is, when one thinks of Egypt, one automatically visualizes pyramids, sphinxes, the massive sprawling temples and shrines, the beautifully preserved tombs of kings and queens, and not forgetting the glorious treasure of the boy king, Pharaoh Tutankhamun. Yet very few have ever heard of Gebel El Silsila, a vast complex of sandstone quarries, ancient monuments, tombs, stelae, and now even temples, rock art, and workmen villages, not forgetting Roman roads, bridges, and fort, all associated with the quarrying of sandstone for the past 3,500 or more years. Now, Friends of Silsila brings all this and more to you directly from this ancient, wondrous site, with yet more secrets to be discovered by the team. But we need your help. There is so much work to accomplish that there's more than our lifetime's worth. Why not be part of that legacy? Immortalize yourself. Become the next Lord Carnarvon. Invest in the future. Be part of the discovery and the adventure. Why not come and participate as a volunteer? The Friends of Silsila requires ongoing funding from a wide range of sources, and there are many ways that you can donate to help ensure the continued archaeological work, guardianship, care, and preservation of this ancient historic site for future generations. We need your help, so come and join us today at www.friendsofsilsila.com, S-I-L-S-I-L-A, friendsofsilsila.com, and be part of the history. And be sure to look up Friends of Silsila on Facebook to join our group page. Friends of Silsila is a registered Swedish charity, and every penny it receives goes directly to the ongoing work at Gebel El Silsila.
And now, back to the Edward Snowden of the New Testament, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Darty.
Well, hello there. This is Jeffrey Darty. You might have heard me Sunday night on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to be back on there pretty soon, so look forward to it. Keep an eye out, and some interesting activity in the chat room that I definitely want to address. Trekhead asks, would that make the thing a Nephilim? And, you know, that opens up a whole new can of worms, so to speak, that takes us down a whole new route. So if it was a thing, was the thing a Nephilim? So really by a roundabout way, Trekhead is asking, was Jesus a Nephilim? Well, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting perspective. And I certainly can't say to you no at this point. So I have a place where I want to go with it, but I'm not really ready to bring it out right now. That's kind of, you're asking a chapter 10 question, and I'm on chapter 5. But interesting, you're obviously thinking, you're obviously going down a road that is showing constructive thought and independent thinking. So I definitely salute you and give you a kudos for that. And we will be tracking and talking about that down the road. And I do agree with you, just don't get taken. And Cliff asked me, Jeffrey, going to open the portals for the others? I'm not really sure the meaning of that question, so I can't really address that. Okay, I see. We're talking about talking to the others, and we certainly do want to make this this message available to all that would wish to hear, to all that would wish to learn, and to all that would wish to understand. You're certainly welcome, and it is certainly open. And I'm Jeffrey Darty, and we're here to speak light. We're here to speak facts, and we're here to speak helpful information to all those that can benefit from it. We welcome you, and we look forward to bringing information to everyone that is in need of it. And, you know, Dr. Toltec does make a good point that alien, you know, little, you know, babies look, you know, rather alien. They look rather otherworldly. 200 years ago, they probably had no idea, of course, Dr. Toltec says, of what an unborn baby looked like physically. But the comment was that Jesus was a completely different to a usual baby. And it was 2,000 years ago, obviously. But yes, I mean, all of those things are valid questions. And all of these things are indicative of great thoughts. And this is what it's all about. You don't have to agree with me. I don't have to agree with thee. But when we have open discussion, when we have back and forth, where people are encouraged and able to share their differing opinions, if we're not careful, somebody might actually learn something. Because Dr. Toltec, Trekhead, The Cliff, Rocky, they think in different ways than I do. And I'm not trying to exclude anyone, but very few of you actually show up. Unless you've physically intentionally signed in on the chat room. So I'm not excluding the vast multitude of you that aren't on, but I'm just trying to make a point. It's open discussion. Open discovery is the best way for us all to learn. So we shouldn't cross our arms and say, well, he doesn't believe the way I do, and she doesn't believe the way I do, and they don't believe the way I do, so I'm not going to talk to them. The us for and no more attitude is what perpetuates ignorance. So here we are trying to perpetuate the opposite of ignorance. So we want to open it up for all types of discussion and all types of answers. So was there alien involvement in the crucifixion of Jesus? Wow. Was there alien involvement in the crucifixion of Jesus? Well, guess what? I'll just read it to you from the scripture, and you decide if there was alien involvement. We're reading out of Mark chapter 15, and when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. So from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, there was darkness over the land. And then at the ninth hour, when that darkness lifted, obviously, at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which, being interpreted, is, my God, why have you forsaken me? So Jesus, at the ninth hour, cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because at the ninth hour, this darkness, according to King James, that started the sixth hour has lifted. So let's look at it in literal English. When the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land till the ninth hour. You know, we've been taught to believe that that means the sun set, the sun went down, the sun was not shining anymore, darkness fell. But the literal English says, from the Greek, a shadow fell upon the land. A shadow fell upon the land. The literal rendering of the original language has been horribly mangled in the King James translation. Darkness did not fall. A shadow fell. Night did not come. A shadow fell. Literally, this is what the passage clearly says. The sun did not diminish in power at all. Something blocked the sun and cast a shadow over a large area of Jerusalem for 3 hours. So I ask, what was large enough to block out the sun and cast a shadow over such a large area? What was large enough to block out the sun and cast a shadow over a large area of the city of Jerusalem? And then, adding intrigue to this discussion is the fact that whatever it was, apparently Jesus was able to see it as he hung on the cross. Because it was at the ninth hour that he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why did he cry out at the ninth hour, not the seventh hour, not the eighth hour? He cried out at the ninth hour. Remember what happened at the ninth hour? The darkness, the shade, the shadow lifted. So at the ninth hour, the shadow lifted, and it was when that shadow lifted that Jesus cried out. Could it be because whatever was causing that shadow went away. Whatever it was that was causing the shadow apparently went away, and that was what upset Jesus so greatly. Jeff, you're adding into things. You're reading into things. No. Hold on a second. Because the literal rending of my God, why have you forsaken me is, why have you abandoned me and left me here? Shadow falls at hour 6. Shadow lifts at hour 9. Jesus has been silent the whole time. All of a sudden, shadow lifts. And Jesus says, why are you abandoning me and leaving me here? So the shadow-causing object is going away, according to the text, and it's the departure of the shadow-causing object that causes Jesus to say, why are you abandoning me? Why are you leaving me behind? Who says, why are you abandoning me and leaving me behind? Someone that is expecting to get taken away. If I'm waiting on a bus, or if I'm trying to get to the bus stop and I see it driving away as I'm pulling up, I'll say, hey, why are you abandoning me? Why are you leaving me behind? If I've got a ride with my buddies and before I can get into the car, they take off, I might say, why are you abandoning me? Why are you leaving me behind? Jesus expected this object to take him away. What kind of object does one expect to be taken away in? And what kind of object that could take a person away would be large enough to cast a shadow over a large portion of the city of Jerusalem? Now let's look at the text again before we draw any conclusions. Going back to the text, and behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. The earth did quake, the rocks rent, the graves were opened. And there's three great events really that take place here. The earth quakes and the rocks rent. That's a straightforward, or at least a rather straightforward description of a seismic event. What's striking again is that this event occurs at the ninth hour, simultaneous with the departure of whatever it was that was blocking out the sun, leaving Jesus behind. It's apparent that the force exerted by the object leaving was great enough to cause a localized earthquake, some type of a gravimetric force, some type of great exhaust was sufficient enough was a localized earthquake that actually shifted the foundations of the temple. How do I know that? Because the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And for that to happen, one side of that foundation had to drop out, while the other side was raised or at least remained the same. That would cause it to be ripped from top to bottom. And we're not talking about a curtain like the one hanging in your house right now. We're talking about a curtain that was, if you hold up your hand and spread out your fingers from your pinky to your thumb, that's the distance of the thickness of the veil there between the Holy of Holies and the Holy Place. That veil was about somewhere between 6 and 9 inches thick, tightly woven. I mean, you can't rip this thing. It's almost unrippable. But when the foundation of that temple shifted, it ripped it from top to bottom, or at least that's the claim. And the earthquake caused by the departing thing shifted that foundation, at least temporarily, causing a significant out-of-level condition that resulted in the veil of the temple being ripped in two. And it's crucial to note that the very clear testimony is that it ripped from top to bottom. And that would only result from a shift in the foundation, exactly what we expect to happen during an earthquake. And the rocks rent, the graves were open. Additional evidence of the earthquake is found in the statement that the rocks were broken and the graves were open. Gravestones rolled away, literally, is what that's saying. So when we put text with text, We have something huge blocking out the sun and causing a shadow to be cast over a significant portion of Jerusalem for about 3 hours. Then we see the something withdrawing, and upon its exit, Jesus, who sees it leaving, is upset that the object he expected to carry him away had in fact left him behind. And he cries out, "Hey, why are you leaving me behind? Why are you abandoning me?" And the withdrawal of this huge object puts off such energy that a local earthquake or seismic disturbance strong enough to shift the foundations of the temple and to break and unlodge gravestones was produced. Let's kind of summarize what we know. It was large enough, whatever this thing was, to cast a shadow over a large area of the city of Jerusalem. It stayed aloft for 3 hours under its own power. It was clearly visible, and Jesus expected it to take him away, and he was highly agitated when it did not, and its exit put off enough energy to cause a localized earthquake. And George Norrie brought up a point to me that I was unaware of. I think George's religious heritage is Catholicism, and he mentioned to me that the Fatima revelations, you know, Our Lady of Fatima, were that at the crucifixion, the sun came down. And of course, we know from our learning and modern knowledge that the sun could not literally come down, but George theorized that it was a reflective metallic disc that lowered. And that's what the Fatima revelations are indicating. And that would be perfectly in line with the shadow-causing object departing and perhaps descending and its departure. And that would be what caused it, because it did depart and it did descend. That's what caused it to put off an exhaust or a gravimetric, gravitational type of force that caused the upheaval and the earthquakes, if you will. So what blocked out the sun and caused an earthquake at the crucifixion? Again, if you can get your mind out of Easter, if you can get your mind out of the Passion, if you can get your mind off of Mel Gibson and Jim Caviezel and the Passion of the Christ, if you can get your mind out of the religious context that it's been in since you were knee-high to a grasshopper. What caused the sun to be blocked? What caused an earthquake? An objective modern mind might well conclude, based upon the text alone, that it was a great craft. A craft that we often categorize as a mothership. Wow. Just read the Bible, folks. Just reading the text, folks, with some great commentary from George Norrie about the Fatima revelations of the sun or a bright shining object coming down. And at the resurrection of Jesus, it says there was a great earthquake because the angel of the Lord descended, came down, just like the Fatima revelation. Just like the object descending to cause the earthquake and disturbances at the crucifixion, now the angel of the Lord, or the messenger of the Lord, descends. And as it descended, the stone was rolled back from the doors. There was great seismic activity, literally rendered. So it's exactly the same scenario, caused by the withdrawal of the mothership at the crucifixion, which would cause us to ask, was this caused by the return of that ship? The literal language says, because the messenger of the Lord was descending or coming down out of the heavens. So something was indeed descending. Something was indeed coming down. And as it drew near, the literal language says, the seismic activity it caused made the stone roll away. So as this thing came near, enough force was exerted by its arrival to once again cause gravestones to roll away, just as the departure of the mothership at the crucifixion. So when you begin to put one and one together, you begin to come up with two. And it begins to look like there's things transpiring that we haven't been told about. There's things transpiring that we haven't had explained to us. And it seems like, in the words of Ricky Ricardo, Lucy, you got some explaining to do. And I say, Pastor, you got some explaining to do. I say, Priest, Father, you got some explaining to do. And I say to each and every one of you, to yourself, you got some explaining to do. How do we deal with this? How do we reconcile this? You know, it's just so much easier when you open your mind and just accept truth, or you at least open your mind and say, you know what? This requires my attention. And I remember when this information started coming to me, I was pastoring a church. I was the pastor. And I started having these type of questions like, man, what they told me isn't true. What I've learned isn't true. A lot of this stuff is not right. And yet I know that a lot of it is right. And how am I to decide what's right and what's wrong? And all of a sudden, I was at a place where I couldn't rely on what they told me anymore. And I had to start learning and deciding for myself. And that's what this is all about, my friends. It's not about going from a pastor or a priest telling you what to believe and turning into some crazy long-haired ex-Pentecostal evangelist on the radio telling you what to believe. That's not my job. And it's not about you leaving a pastor or a priest and running over to a guru or a psychic, or a channeler to tell you what to do. And it's not about getting all advanced and saying, oh, well, I won't go to a pastor or a priest or a channeler or a psychic. I'll go straight to the spirit guides. I'll go straight to the ascended masters. No, 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 no. Leaving pastor and priest to go to channeler and psychic is leaving the frying pan going to the fire. Going from psychic and channeler to spirit guide and ascended master is going from the frying pan to the fire. You've got to break the cycle of spiritual dependency that has been ingrained into you and to your parents and their parents and all of our parents back 2,000 years. We've got to break 2,000 years of spiritual dependence. And like Dr. Toltec talks about, we've got to break 2,000 years of energetic transfer, which is really what sin is. We've got to break 2,000 years of energetic transfer into our lives, into our minds, into our spirits. And a lot of you, you know, talk about getting unspiritual. Some of you will understand what I'm talking about. Some of you were not as big a derelict as I was at one time. But I remember having drank a bunch of Heinekens and being drunk. I mean, drunk. And having the cops show up or having my parents show up or having a near accident happen, and boom, instantly sober. Doesn't happen very often, but it did happen to me at least once I can remember, where I went from drunk to sober as a judge like that. Now, it can happen to you like that in the spiritual realm as well. It's just not very often. So you could be very much into or very much under control of the energetic transfer, the sin, if you will, from your fathers and forefathers and from the conditioning of 2,000 years. And you can potentially, boom, become free in an instant. And I hope you're that guy. And thinking back at it, I could have been that guy, because I knew in an instant, my spirit knew, my blink knew, I knew that, holy crap, Batman, something's wrong. Something's foul in the state of Denmark. And if I'd have got up and left that church at that moment, packed up the kids and the wife and said, I'm out of here, something's wrong, I have no doubt that I would have been, if not instantaneously, but very quickly brought up to speed in the spirit, if you will. But it took me, wow, it took me another at least 12 years from that first realization of, oh man, something's wrong. It took me 12 years to give up the church, give up the salary, give up the house, give up the prestige, give up the honor, give up the glory, give up the easy life and the good life, and give up. And remember, I trained for this, you know, Bible college, being a junior pastor, youth pastor. So I'm just making excuses for myself. The reality is I didn't have the guts to quit when I knew it was wrong. I didn't have the testicular fortitude to quit when I knew it was wrong. I didn't have the integrity to quit when it was wrong. So I bled it out for another 10 or 12 years before I was finally able to make the break. And really, that was only after the divine allowed me to be cracked upside my fool head with a 2x4. And I didn't plan to say this, but I'm going to say this because I think somebody needs to hear it. My wife had to leave me for me to get clear enough to where I could see what was going on with my spirituality and my destiny. And even though I'm not for divorce, even though I'm not, you know, against marriage in any way, there comes a time where the divine is more interested in your ultimate salvation than the divine is interested in your marriage or in your job or in your relationship. There comes a time where things that are good and right and acceptable, sometimes the divine will allow those things to go away to allow you to get to a place that's better in regards to your eternity. I used to say that God was more interested in my salvation than he was in my marriage. Of course, that's old paradigm thinking, but you understand where I'm at. And somebody somewhere needed to hear that. You're at a fork in the road. Take it. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian whistleblower, and I'm encouraging you to unindoctrinate yourself.